Blog Talk Radio. Welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marnie Swedberg, your captain for our 60-minute flight from traditional travel to state-of-the-art expeditions. If you are a million miler already, or you just need some tips from million milers, you need a free membership over at themillionmileclub.com, where you'll get all the latest ways to save time, stress, and of course, money. Themillionmileclub.com. As always, thanks for flying with Marnie's friends, the practical, helpful, and encouraging way to get anything important done faster, smarter, and better. Have a great flight.
Hey everybody, this is Marnie Swedberg, and we are joined today by nearly 2 million miler Dan Pointer. This is so fun. Dan Pointer flies more than 6,000 miles a week, boards a plane every 2.5 days, and is on his 12th round-the-world itinerary in 2 years. He has flown nearly 2 million miles to over 40 countries and has even skydived into the North Pole. He's the author of 126 books on the top, lots of topics, everything from his passion skydiving all the way to what he's learned along the way, which is how to write and publish books. Welcome, Dan.
Oh, Marnie, it's great to be here. Thank you.
I'm so excited that your feet are on the ground long enough to do an interview.
I'm only home for 4 days. I just finished the 12th around the world trip. That was, Paris, Antwerp, Amsterdam, Zurich, Singapore, Sydney, and home. I leave on Sunday to go to Washington, D.C., Dubai, Cairo, Joburg, Bloemfontein, Cape Town, then to Singapore, Narita, and home.
Oh, my goodness.
Exciting time. Spend a lot of time in the air.
You do spend a lot of time in the air, and who better to help us understand how to do air travel more efficiently with less stress than you. I'm sure you have figured out all of the shortcuts that there are available to people who travel. One of the things that you mentioned to me when we were talking earlier was festooning. Why don't you tell everybody about that?
Oh, that's so important. Yes, my bags, both my carry-on and my check bags, have orange ribbons all over them, not just one little red ribbon. No, it's just festooned with orange ribbons. And this is very important because you never know who's going to pick up your bag, and you want to make sure that your bag looks much different from everybody else's. Of course, it's very helpful if your bag stands out on the carousel. Makes it a little easier to find. But I had a case last year where I got off the airport, off the airplane to a very small airport at night, and it was an RJ, so I got off to went down the stairway on the tarmac, and my bag was supposed to be on one of those carts, and I looked all over and couldn't find it. And then about 20 feet away, I saw it lying there on the tarmac. Ah. And what had happened, apparently, is somebody had grabbed the wrong bag, got that far, and then they felt the ribbons on the handle, looked down and said, oops, not mine, and
just
it.
Left it laying there.
And just yesterday, I came into LAX, and one of the United employees met me and got me on an earlier flight, and we started talking about the ribbons on my bags, and she said that she had one of her carry-on bags, more of an attaché case type bag, taken from an overhead on the airplane because somebody just reached up there, thought it was theirs, and they were gone.
Well, that's great, because that was the next question I was going to ask you. I almost always do carry-on. I hate checking my bags, and so I always do carry-on, and I was going to ask, do you even need it when you're doing carry-on? But you do.
Oh, yeah, you do, and I always carry on when possible, but on some of these round-the-world trips,
sure,
where I have to pack, the tuxedo and the shoes and all that stuff.
Right, you just can't do it.
It's just too much. I can't get it into the 22-inch bag. But, yes, on the carry-on, I had a case in Reno just last month where I was at a conference, and I rolled into the room to get coffee with my rolling carry-on and the handles up, and a friend of mine came in with his bag, and he parked it, went over, got his coffee. He went back, and he grabbed the handle on my bag, and he was outside the room before I yelled, "Hey, Mo, look at the bag." It's just people don't look at them.
It's just,
and of course,
so
quite often
to do.
The bag is being picked up by the man for the woman, And he has a vague idea of what her bag looks like.
Sure.
And if you lose your bag, you know, especially your regular bag, what are you going to do when you have to be somewhere
right.
dressed tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock?
Right, exactly, exactly. Well, tell us a little bit more about that, about if you do lose your bag, what's the best thing you can do at that point?
Well, there's two things. Number one, if you want to get it back to the airport, there is a thing called the coat switch room. And very few people know about that. But if you pick up the wrong whatever by mistake, that's where you should drop it off, and hopefully yours will be there.
Okay.
The other thing, of course, is looking through to see if you can identify the person, look for a bag tag, and try to contact them because they're desperate too. And
right.
I know. And if you pick up the wrong bag, yes, it's a little embarrassing, but do the right thing and get that bag back to the person as quickly as possible.
What would you want somebody else to do, right?
Which
right.
brings up that you should always have identification in your own coats and jackets. You know, at least put your business card in your pocket so that if somebody picks up your jacket by mistake. You know what? In fact, I did this once. I was flying to Dallas. It was late at night, and I'm in the first class section, and I just walked back, and I grabbed my jacket off of the rack, you know, off the little hanger there, you know, put it on, walked out. And I was at the hotel in daylight before I realized it was the wrong color.
Mm.
It was dark. I didn't know that.
Right.
It happened to be my size. But the individual had a business card in the pocket. I called up. He was not pleased. But at least he got his jacket back.
Right.
And mine was
right.
at the coat switch room back at the airport.
Waiting for you. Oh, yeah. Now, when you're talking about that, it brings up another thought to my mind. One of the questions I have when I travel, especially abroad, is that I wonder where to keep my money on my body. You know, how do you do it?
Well, let me preface that a little bit. One of the problems with the money is sorting it all out.
Right.
So I keep it separated. The bills are pretty easy, but the coins aren't. I mean, you look at Australia, New Zealand, the UK, a lot of these countries, they have the queen on one side. I mean, they
right.
all look alike,
yeah.
and it's really hard to sort them out. So what I do is I get those plastic snack bags. They're like
sure.
the half-size
mm-hmm.
sandwich bag.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Perfect for currency. And I keep all the coins and all the bills separated in their own bag.
Okay.
So you can get to the next country, you can put away what you have and pull up the new bag, and you've got to put that in your wallet or just throw it in your purse. It's just perfect.
Do you feel pretty confident carrying them in a wallet?
Carrying what?
Your wallet.
I haven't really had any difficulty with that.
Okay.
I haven't really been concerned with you know, money belts and things
uh-huh.
like that.
Okay.
I try to be aware, but we also have to be cognizant of the fact that these people who are trying to steal things from you are professionals.
Right.
They're really good at it. They work in teams. They know what they're doing. So, you take every precaution possible, and you try to stay aware. But this means you never take your hand off your bag. My carry-on bag has the ribbons all over it, which is somewhat of a deterrent to stealing it. But when I'm standing at a counter, it's between me and the counter.
Yeah.
And if I turn my back for any reason, my hand is still on the handle. That these things are, you know, maybe you're a little paranoid, but I think
well,
it helps.
You just have to lose it once, and then all of a sudden,
well, and
it doesn't seem very paranoid anymore.
He was sitting on a bench in Amsterdam, and a guy comes up and starts asking him questions in some strange foreign language. And then he turned around, his bag was gone.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
And they're professionals.
Right,
they
right. Huh, cool. Okay, not cool that they're professionals. Cool.
No.
Cool that there's a way to work around it. Okay, any other money tips then?
Well, I understand that the best place to change your money is at an ATM.
Oh, okay.
Of course, you charge your hotel room and all of that. You don't want to change your money at the airport because they mark it up about 15 cents, and they charge you $5 or $6 for the transaction, and that's for each transaction. So if you're
okay.
getting euros and pounds, that's two transactions. That's twice as much. They really stick you. So
where do you, when you get to a different country and you need money, where do you look for an ATM?
Well, I was in Sydney a couple of days ago, and downtown they're all over.
Okay.
And the banks are all over, and the money changers, actually the money changers there weren't gouging. Their
okay.
prices were right in there. I have a little currency program for my iPhone, and it gives you up-to-date, up-to-the-minute currency exchanges, so you know what you should be getting.
Can you purchase something like that or download it for free, or how do you get a currency program for your iPhone?
It's a free app. You get it from the iPhone's App Store.
From the iPhone's App Store.
And,
cool.
So you just go to the App Store and type in currency and
sure.
it'll pop the program. There's several of them now. And you can pick the currencies that you want, and they're always right there and they're up to date.
Dan, I don't know how long you have, but would you have a few minutes if we come back from a commercial break to talk about jet lag?
Oh, sure. That's one of my favorite subjects.
Okay, hang on. 1 minute. We'll be right back with Dan Poynter. You don't want to miss the next segment here about jet lag.
Is it ever your turn to come up with fresh ideas for parties, events, or retreats? Check out the 26 fully developed theme sets at ideasforwomensministry.com. That's ideasforwomensministry.com. Ideas, publicity templates, and more. ideasforwomensministry.com.
Well, hi, this is Marnie Swedberg, and you've joined Marnie Live with our guest today, Dan Poynter, who is a pilot, an author of over 126 books, and a skydiver. He is, he's been around the world 12 times as of a recent trip and has flown to 40 different countries. I wanted to ask you, Dan, how do you handle jet lag? I mean, you must have serious body confusion all the time.
Well, different people are affected different ways. Some people have trouble with one time zone. Some people can tolerate several time zones. But I've done a lot of study on this, and it takes one time zone. I'm sorry, one day per time zone to catch up.
Oh.
Now, what many people do is they'll fly from wherever to someplace a third of the way around the world, say from here to Sydney, and then they'll have a business meeting or they'll give a speech or whatever, and then they'll take a six-day holiday because they bought a seven-day ticket. That is the wrong way to do it. What you want to do is go and spend 6 days on your holiday and do your business or whatever on the last day, because that's when you're going to be the sharpest. It has nothing to do with sleep. Time zones are time zones, and it takes one day per time zone. A number of years ago, I was chief of delegation for the U.S. parachute team, and we flew to northern Germany and went right into competition. And the first round came off, and the U.S. team was terrible. And I said to the team members, you know, what's going on? And they said, well, the door's on the other side of the airplane, and we're used to jumping out with the door on the left side. And I said, I don't think so. So I studied up on that. And there was bad weather in Germany that year, and so it took a week to get the 10 rounds off, and the team got better each day, and they finally won the round. Then I went to the board of directors and I said, we're going to Queensland and Australia for the championships the next year. That's more time zones for most of these people. I said, we have to practice in country. And they said, no, we can't afford it. And I said, well, then save your money. Don't send a team. It's false economy. And I told them about the time zones and the jet lag. So they came up with the money. We went to Queensland to the drop zone in Toowoomba. And it was great because they had kangaroos on right there on the airport. But anyway, the team wanted to jump, and we said, no, it's too expensive. And they bitched and moaned, and so we said, okay, and sent them up. And they were terrible. They're jumping against the clock, so you can tell.
Right.
And so we said, okay, go to the beach, go chase kangaroos, but get lost for a week. Then they came back, went into serious competition. Then we went to Gatton, Australia for the championships, and they were just great right from the beginning. So, that's just proof. And when you're in a sport, you're jumping quite often against the clock. But this also goes for giving a speech or going into a business negotiation. You don't want to be doing an 88% performance. You want to be absolutely great. And the time zones, the jet lag, are definitely working against you.
Dan, I haven't done this yet, and I wanted to be sure to do this all through the show, but I wanted to let people know where they can get more information from you and about you. You have a website called Parapublishing, as in parachute, parapublishing.com, and over there, links to all of your books and your other resources. You've got a lot of great stuff there for people who want to learn how to skydive, who want to write and publish their own books. And what are some of your other topics, Dan?
Oh, I concentrate on the parachutes and skydiving and the information on how to write, publish, and promote books. I have done books on frisbee play, hang gliding, computers, the first book on word processors, whatever is really interesting to me at the time. But right now I'm pursuing the writing and publishing and the skydiving. People often say I should write a book on travel, but Marnie, it changes so quickly.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too. After we're done here, I want you to call me. Whenever you have another new tip, you call me. We'll pass it along to people. It does change so quickly. It does. And there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of things that have become a lot more complex about travel in the past few years. Do you use the iCard? I'm calling it the wrong name. I'm thinking iScan, and I can't think of the scan card.
Oh, Global Entry.
Yeah, thank you. Go. Do you use one of those yourself? I suppose
Yes, I do. Both for coming into the U.S. and for Canada.
Okay.
Which is a different name, but called Nexus up there. But in fact, I used it just yesterday. Came into L.A., and I'm one of those funny people. I'm always the first one on the airplane, always the first one off. I was the first one off, and I'm walking pretty briskly, and I got into the immigration area, went over to the left side, over to the machine, put in the passport, and then answered some questions, and meanwhile it's scanning my retina and doing the thumbprints, and then from there you just, you know, right off to the baggage area, and if you were dragging your bags, not checking bags, then you're out of there, you're gone.
Yeah.
It's much
yeah.
faster. I mean, there's nothing worse than having two 747s land right in front of you and get to immigration, and you find that the immigration line is all the way to Calgary.
Right. How many? I know around the U.S. there aren't a whole lot of places that have that yet. How do you find it around the world?
Oh, well, you can't use it anywhere else. It's just for coming back to the U.S.
It's just for coming in. Okay.
Yeah.
So
major,
you're fine.
The major airports have it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and more, I'm sure, will. Well, over a period of time. Any other shortcuts you can think of right now for people who are traveling in 2009?
Oh, got a whole bunch of them.
Why don't you rattle some off real quick for us?
Okay, number one, pack all of your clothing in Ziploc bags, clear Ziploc bags. A couple of reasons for that. Number one, it keeps them dry. It's also a dust barrier. You can put your clothes in there and throw it down on the bed, sit on it, and seal it, and that will compress everything.
Okay.
So it'll pack up smaller. But also, if security opens it up, they can see right through the bag, so it's not pawing through your underwear. And so even my dirty clothes get rolled up and put into a Ziploc bag.
Okay.
And my toiletries are in Ziploc bags, so again, you don't have people pawing through your stuff. You open up the case, and you can see through all the bags. And security has to know that you know what you're doing, too.
Right.
So let's see. Another possibility. Oh, yeah. Label your laptop. Do you know that 12,000 laptops are lost in U.S. airports every week? Right? Most of them are left at security checkpoints. And only 33% are recovered. Can you imagine that?
No.
Okay. So what you do is put your identification information on the bottom. Make up a label that has your name and your email address and your mobile phone number.
Yeah.
So that they can get on the PA system and call out
right.
your name, or they can call your mobile phone number.
Isn't that something? Huh.
I mean, you know, you wouldn't be carrying that laptop with you if you didn't need it.
No kidding. Right? I can't even imagine. Huh.
You know, just be very aware. It used to be that a lot of laptops were stolen at security, but there's a little more security at security now. So it's a little harder for people to be fooling around there. So just be very aware. And I put my laptop sort of in the middle of the stuff that I'm sending through. So
okay.
my attaché
right.
case is on one side, then the laptops, and then
right.
the
coats and shoes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Let's see, what else? Oh, when should you be most alert? The most serious time in flying, when are accidents going to occur? Only on takeoff or landing. If they happen in the air, it's all over anyway. But so keep your shoes on. Don't take your shoes off. Don't put on the airplane socks until you're well aboard, you know, well up in the air, and make sure you've got your shoes on for landing. If something happens, it'd be nice to have your shoes.
Yeah.
And I was looking over at a lady yesterday, and typical, she's wearing flip-flops. You know, well, that's great. But what if you have to really scramble to get out of a crashed airplane?
Right.
Probably not the best thing. So wear your shoes. They say that 70% of the serious accidents occur during takeoff and landing.
You know, I think probably other people, and for me for sure, when you fly a significant amount, you kind of forget that you're flying. You know,
you don't really
think about it.
I'm a pilot, and most people aren't. To them, it's just an uncomfortable bus ride.
Right, exactly.
And they're being treated like prisoners, not passengers.
Right.
the airlines have a real problem because people don't like to fly.
Right.
And you kind of wonder what business they're in or what they're concentrating on or what they think they're doing with their clients. I mean, it's like people have to be there. It's like taxes.
Right.
And,
right.
So true. So they've got a real problem. I'm a pilot, so I understand what's going on, and I enjoy it.
Sure. We have a couple more minutes here, Dan.
Sure.
I have a question for you about eating. How do you survive airports and travel?
Well, I don't eat airport food. I do eat in the lounges when I have some snacks, but I stay away from the salt, sugar, and grease.
Uh-huh.
If I'm taking off for Sydney at 10 o'clock at night, I skip the meal and go directly to sleep because it's time to go to sleep. And try to get as much sleep as possible.
Do you try to do food, like fruit and stuff, in your hotel room, or do you just pretty much go with what you can access as you're going along?
Oh, well, I try to, but I try not to overdo the fruit because I just love to eat fruit. When you get in the Southern Hemisphere, they've got papaya and mango and pineapple and all that. And I eat too much of that stuff and make
me
very
plenty.
Sleepy.
Yeah.
And it's hard to catch up. Now, some people, for sleeping, they'll take melatonin or valerian. I've tried some of that stuff. It hasn't made any difference to me. And I think a lot of people take sleeping pills because they're just knocked out the entire time, and I won't take anything like that.
Yeah. Now, when you're doing changing the topic completely here, when you're doing a round-the-world trip like that, Do you even try to get on this new schedule, or do you just try to maintain your U.S. schedule?
Oh, no, you try to go for the local schedule. You've got to get up at a certain time, and the restaurant has certain hours, and you've got to conduct your business at a certain time. And so you just constantly try to catch up. And I always try to get in a few days before I have to give a speech or do some other business.
Yeah.
So you just keep pacing yourself, and sometimes you catch up and sometimes you don't.
Huh. Dan, this has been just awesome. I think I could pick your brain forever and probably not get all the tips out of it. But I want to just thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today about traveling and some tips that you've come across in your much great travels. Everybody can find out more about you at parapublishing.com, and that's P-A-R-A publishing.com. That's Dan's site. It includes links to his 126 books and all kinds of great information there. Dan, I just appreciate so much your time and for you spending a few moments of your time on the ground with us, and I hope you have a super rest of the day.
Oh, Marnie, thank you so much. Honor and a pleasure.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.